I'm Dan Orlovsky. When I'm looking for safety, I always take the extra steps and listen to Chris and Case on the Detroit Lions podcast.
Lions with it, second and goal from the 8, down 6, but on the move. Chris, working from the gun, looks out to the right, now checks out that Viking defense. Takes the snap, back to pass, looks right, got Case in the end zone, touchdown Detroit Lions! That's it, packs the bag, starts the plane. This game is over! How big is that?
And now it's time to start the Detroit Lions podcast.
Lions fans, it's time for the podcast you've been waiting for. The show where Kool-Aid runs blue, faces turn red, and rose-colored glasses never go out of style. This is the Detroit Lions podcast, your Detroit Lions and Reddit connection. And now, two guys who have never dropped a Matthew Stafford pass, Chris and Case.
Hey, howdy-ho, Lions fans. Welcome to the Detroit Lions podcast. This is episode 181, and it's the official Detroit Lions podcast for Reddit. I am your dashing host, Chris, and with me is my good friend and co-host, Case. How are you doing, my man?
Well, Chris, I got to tell you.
I love you, Alexander.
Oh, yeah, you do, huh?
I mean, come on, Chris.
I love Zach Center.
All right. In today's show, we're going to talk about a couple things. We've got Lions skid marks in Minnesota. Bruce on board. Marciano's cherry's been busted. We're off to Chicago and a whole lot more. We got a great show today. Case, you ready to go, my man?
Chris, I
love Zach Center.
God damn it.
Let's kick this off and break it down.
All right, time for a couple of quick announcements. First, check us out and help us out on Patreon. Special thanks to Dylan from
Guam.
Ooh, nice one. Of course, our very first donor, Mathis, and Brian B. iPrevailBand.com. Check them out. New album coming soon, and special stuff from them for us as well. Check us out on Patreon.com/Detroit Lions Podcast. That's how you join the crew. Patreon.com/Detroit Lions Podcast. You get access to the Slack channel, which is full of awesome stuff. And also, there is the pre-show show. And we record the pre-show while we're getting ready for each podcast now and put it up for our Slack people. And it's gotten rave reviews. It's number one in the charts, so make sure to check that out. Again, patreon.com/Detroit Lions Podcast, or go to Detroit Lions Podcast and click on the Patreon link. We thank you all. As little as $1 a month helps us out. Anything more than that is gravy. And God, Case loves gravy.
I'm not going to tell you you're wrong.
Give us a like on Facebook, facebook.com/TheDetroitLionsPodcast, facebook.com/TheDetroitLionsPodcast, and on the Twitter machine at DETLionsPodcast, DETLionsPodcast. Get those follows in. It's the only place to see Case
with no pants on.
Ooh, nice. Check us out on YouTube, youtube.com/DetroitLionsPodcast. You are missing out. We got the Friday show with Risden now doing the quick takes. We got the Sunday show, the post-game show going on, all on YouTube. YouTube.com/Detroit Lions Podcast. Don't miss it. You need it if you do. Go subscribe, click the bell, get notified when we go live. We're going to do all kinds of great stuff there. So go. Rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, wherever you find us. Don't forget, we're also on Spotify. Love those 5-star reviews. Thank you guys for feeding us those reviews on the iTunes and all those places. We do like to say, if you have some constructive criticism, go ahead and feed that into the subreddit. That's the best place to get it. This is a community show. We want to make sure it's owned by the community, and that means you. So that's the place to talk about those things. In the other places, those 5-star reviews are what help us out the most.
It's the only place where I actually see if somebody has a complaint or a criticism. I see them when they show up in the subreddit, and I'm happy to.
So it's all good.
Okay, there you go. Give us a call via Skype, Detroit Lions Podcast. All one word, Detroit Lions Podcast, or call us in the Lions line at Stafford, Blunt, Carry On, Lions, 929-33-LIONS. It's 929-335-4667. Give us a call and hear yourself on the show.
Tighten your chin straps, kids. It's time to review This Week in Reddit.
All right, it's time to talk about all the fun and exciting things going down this week in Reddit. And boy, things have been, it's been an interesting week since the loss. I mean, I've seen a lot. Sandman is beaten down. He's saying he's as heartbroken and sad and confused about this team as he's been since 0-16 and 2-14. He's like, I don't understand why I'm worse in worse shape than I was in those. Maybe it's because I expected those or whatever. This loss to Minnesota hurt a lot of people. Left us with a dry well on the putting them on blast calls. We got a lot of calls on after the game on Sunday, but Case, this one hurt a lot of people. This one hurt deep, didn't it?
Well, anytime you lose to a division, you know, opponent in that fashion, it's going to hurt. I think I came at it from a different angle than I think most people did. Like, I didn't expect us to win this game. I picked the Vikings to win in my pick'em league. Like,
So you finally got one right with the Lions, huh?
Right, exactly. Actually, I think I'm 2-6 how many games have we played? 2-6 on picking Lions games this year. But okay, so let me give you a perspective on why it doesn't surprise me that we lose. First of all, we released Tate. And say what you want about the trade, I generally am in favor of what they did. There was going to be some issues.
Of course. Without a bye week trade like that, you're absolutely right. Something like that happening.
There was going to be some issues because he is the safety valve for this offense and he's gone. And the only other safety valve on this offense is Theo Riddick. And against a defensive front like the Vikings, where they have to keep Theo in to block, I mean, there is no safety valve. None. And Stafford has gotten used to having that over the past 3 years in Tate or Bolden or whoever it was at that given time. There is no player on the team right now who can fill that role. Mm-hmm. They signed Bruce Ellington, and I don't know that that's going to solve that problem, but I mean, that's essentially what they're trying to sign there. I like Brandon Powell. I like the potential of Brandon Powell, but he's not that guy either.
Too early. Yet. Way too early. He's no Kenny Galladay to take off as quickly as he did.
So if you look at the offensive struggles, which span the entire game, first and second half, I'll talk about how the defense was better in the second half than the first half later, but they just, when you get sacks like he was getting, he was looking for a place to dump off the ball, and there just wasn't a place to dump off the ball. And I know and that Kuda a lot
wasn't
of people,
giving him the calls either. It's not right, just that Tate wasn't there, but everybody that would be a safety valve in that case was now in pass pro. There was literally no safety valves anymore because they were getting destroyed by a very good defense.
And you shouldn't discount that. The Vikings have come alive. They really have. And so, like, it isn't like this was happening against a weak defense. This was happening against one of the best defenses in the league. And they took advantage of a situation that was clearly, you know, a problem for the Lions. Like, they saw what was going to happen with this team without Tate and said, well, we're going to force that issue. And they did.
And I want to just push on something else too. There's two times where we were down in the red zone where we could have scored, and had we scored
in the first half,
it would have been a completely different game. Minnesota would have changed up their strategy. Absolutely. And we would have dictated how that defense played, and it would have given us a heck of a lot more room. We could not execute down there. Both times there was penalties, false starts. We reacted to the defense, which again, they're a great defense, but we put ourselves in a position not to get out of the mess we were in, which is such a Lions thing to do. Anytime there's an opportunity, you fucking squander it, right? I mean, that's really what it seems to have come down to at this point.
And again, I'd say, you know, at least one of those probably would have ended up converted if Tate was still with the team. And okay, so when we talked a week ago and Tate was released and traded, and we're like, well, is the team, you know, throwing in the towel? I said, no, but I think maybe I'll amend that statement and say, yeah.
I'll tell you something. I'll take a different approach because I don't think they're throwing in the towel, but I think they're putting themselves in a corner.
Oh, definitely.
And they're putting themselves in a corner this season compared to, where they possibly would have been, but the third round pick is going to be a huge, huge benefit down the road. I'll talk a little bit more about that in a little bit.
Well,
but the thing, I think it's not a throw in the towel in. I think right now this looks like an 8-8 team, kind of like you predicted. I was looking at 10-6.
Hey, who said 8-8?
Oh, here we go again. Oh, Jesus Christ. Oh, why do I even do this?
That's bullshit.
Well, okay, so more than the 8-8 prediction that I gave out in the offseason, the big thing I want to lean on that I said in the offseason is that there is a lot going on with the coaching staff right now. And we did see a firing, and that I predict there'll be a lot of changes. And obviously, we just saw Joe Marciano go, and we'll talk about that more in depth later. We'll talk about the special teams. But I said a couple times in the offseason, I think this is now the time to double down on that, that I think we'll see a massive shift in the coaching staff outside of Patricia and maybe a couple other guys. I think the last season, they took the guys they could get, because there was so much upheaval in the NFL as a whole.
And you remember how late it was before we could get our coach because of the
Super
Bowl?
Right. So I do think that there was a lot of signings on the coaching staff that were not necessarily what they wanted long term. It was just what they could get at the moment. And so now going into an off season this next year, we're getting ahead of ourselves. Yeah, I mean, I wasn't predicting us to make the playoffs to begin with, but it's not like 3-5 isn't exactly the same as like 1-6 or anything. Well, so,
let's stick with Minnesota right now, because we've got a couple pieces to talk about on that other stuff. You talked about the offense really quick, and it's one of the things I'm going into my case mode here. I told you that this is a team that needs its offense to score to win games. The defense is going to let points happen, and the offense couldn't do it because they faced a hell of a defense, right? So that's the first one. But the
they're
second
not built
one,
to play from behind.
No. The second one, and this is something that this is where I want to go hard on my told you so. This game was going to revolve around the ability of Tease Tabor to stop whoever he was covering. And Tease Tabor has a perfect record. For quarterbacks, they have a perfect passer rating against him this year, and he is listed as the worst cornerback in the league. I don't know what to tell you. He did not step up. He got burnt. He got penalized. He just got destroyed out there, and everybody is I'm not saying you're necessarily wrong, but everybody's absolutely given up on him. After this game, I mean, there's this whole dumpster fire them all mentality that started out of this Minnesota game. Everyone wants Jim Bob gone. Okay, fine. You know, Marciano's good. We'll have to start, right? Okay, I want Tabor gone. And I'm hearing it already about Patricia, who's coached 8 games, and Quinn and all this. And it's just blowing my mind, the reaction and overreaction of people to what's happening right now. It's hard. It's hard. So go to the defense case. Let's talk about the failures on defense.
Well, I guess we'll say, I'll start with Tease Tabor and say, first of all, never fucking put him on a shifty slot guy. That was a bad decision. That of all the defensive like play calling, putting Tease Tabor on a fast shifty slot receiver was just about the worst decision they could have made.
All the harebrained, low IQ, motherfucking shit they could have done. Right?
I still think like Tease Tabor has a potential role, and he's going to have to earn it next offseason.
And they said it's not as a safety because they're happy with. So this may be code. You may have to decode this. They asked him today about moving Tabor to safety, and they say, no, we're happy with where our safeties are at.
we don't want to bring that group down.
Yeah, well, exactly. And that tells you he better fucking hit it at cornerback or he doesn't have a fucking role. So okay. You can read into you want, but that's what they're
saying. Let me fill this out though. Like, okay, so he has a role maybe in the future as a guy who goes up against big receivers. because that's the only place he's shown, you know, capable in the red zone. In small spaces, he's sticky and can, you know, disrupt things. You go back to the Mike Evans game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers last year. He did a good job against Mike Evans, and I think that's what he's capable of doing. When you try to put the guy into a situation that doesn't fit his, it's not working out. How much you blame him as a player versus how much you blame the coaching decision to put him in that situation, that's really debatable, because I think both situations are bad. You know, you'd rather have out of a guy that got picked where he got picked, a guy who could play anywhere, anytime. Mm-hmm. I think at this point we have to admit that that's not who he is. There's, you know, a lot of people who want to say Quinn sucks at drafting because he drafted Tease Tabor. I mean, it's a miss. I'm not going to argue with that. I'm not trying to pretend that Quinn is perfect. I never was. If you listen to the show, if you watch this show, you know that I'm not a Quinn truther necessarily. But here's what I hope happens. I hope that they go into the offseason. They don't cut Tabor before the end of the season, but they go into the offseason and he has to earn a role in the way that any lower drafted or undrafted or pick up off the street kind of player would have to earn a role kind of player is. And if he doesn't earn it, he doesn't earn it.
Yeah.
That's where he is now. You get 2 years. In my opinion, you get 2 years, and this is year number two.
And I will fully agree. And I think that's who Matt Patricia is. I think you have to perform, or you're just not gonna be around. That's that. And so I'm not worried about him making a move on Tabor. I think by the same token, much like how we talked about Jim Bob Cooter and Matthew Stafford's close relationship, got to give him the rope to hang himself before you can get rid of him.
Yeah,
you trust him. Absolutely. That's that. It's the same thing with the Quinn pick. You can't give up on a cornerback, any cornerback after year one. We wouldn't have Slay today if that was the case, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But he's had his chance now to prove who he is. If and let's just throw back to everybody's love for Ebron. Okay, but this point last year, they wanted him beaten in the town square with soft-sided wiffle ball bats, so it was a nice, long, slow process before he was done. By the end of the season, he was the second coming of Christ, and then he was gone, and everyone's like, yeah, look how he's doing at Indy. Not a lot of Indy talk these days, but the fact is, the same thing could happen with Tabor, right? People really overreact, and it's not just a Detroit thing, but... There is something about Detroit.
It's starting to become a Detroit thing.
Yes, yes. This overreaction.
We'll get into that when we talk.
You talk about the idea of just, you know, some things take some time. The instant reaction of that crew is always 50 years. You know, and it's like, okay, go be a fan of something else. That's that. Okay, so this is something different. This is something new, and you got to let it grow, and you got to let it be, because it's like you planted a new seed in the ground and you're standing over it and putting shade over it and it doesn't grow and you blame the seed, right? That's what's going on. Go ahead.
Can I say something nice though? Like there isn't a lot of bullshit. There isn't a lot of nice to take away from the loss to Minnesota. But if there's one area to look at that was good, it was that the defense came alive in the second half. Ziggy Ansah showed up in a meaningful way.
Good adjustments.
That's a whole other issue, and maybe we shouldn't get too far into that. But how many people thought that Ziggy was just cashing in a paycheck? And, you know,
that was obvious in the second half.
Okay, so let's put that, you know, that ridiculous fan theory out over in a left, you know, field here and leave it there for a while. Ziggy showed up in a meaningful way. It took a long time for him to get healthy, but once he got healthy, he looked good, at least in the second half, once he got his feet under him. Snacks Harrison continued to look good.
Number one player on the defense.
Yeah.
Stupid Quinn doesn't know what he's doing.
There were a lot of plays on the from the defense in the second half that looked really good. It was a tale of two games in terms of the defense. Strictly speaking about the defense, because the offense was shitty all game long.
The offense was beaten by the defense all game long. Let's give the Vikings have a say, right? They don't show up and get told how they play by the other team. It's rare that that happens. It happened to us this game because the Vikings defense is really, really good.
But there were a lot of things to like about what happened in the second half with the defense. And in a game that's a miserable game that we lose as bad as we did, it's easy to, you know, think that everything sucked, but not everything sucked. In the second half, things got under control. We kept Adam Thielen in control. If the offense had been firing on the cylinders that it had been in, you know, 2-3 weeks ago, this was a winnable game. With the way the defense played in the second half, even with how terrible they were, I came out of the first half thinking this was maybe, even including the Jets game week one, this was the worst defensive performance I'd seen this team give. But they turned it around.
Yep. I gotta say, the key is we gotta win out in the division at this point. That's really what it is. But the good news, as funny as it sounds, I mean, we've beaten the Packers. The Packers are obviously not the
Packers. Well, we just lost an away game against probably the best team in the division.
Exactly. So. And really, at this point, when you look at the division, you have to say you're looking for second place in the division. The way Minnesota has played and the way that defense looks, it just looks like you're playing for second in the division and hoping for a wild card. It's the way the NFC North is stacking up right now. We'll talk about Chicago and towards the end of the show and where they've been. But this is, again, this is a place where we can win out against the division. We may lose one more against the Vikings, okay? But it's at home. So there's something there. There's a lot of time between now and then for things to happen.
Really, a lot of it depends on what they're able to change on the offense. Because like I said, you know, right now they're missing the safety valve in Tate. But if they can figure out a way to adust to that, then...
And let's not forget that was a shitty game plan that Cooter just pulled out against that team. He did not seem to adjust.
Yeah.
At all.
No, I won't argue.
All game.
But he has done that. He has adjusted at other times this season. So sure. I'm not going to write that off as a possibility.
No. And that's what I'm saying. This is not time to pack in on this team, right? I don't think so. And you guys, you can be negative about it all you want. I just don't think it's time to pack in yet because just like the Ebron situation last year, like other seasons, we've seen amazing second half run out of the team. I believe we're playing for second. I believe we're playing for a wild card, and I believe it's fully achievable still. We'll see. We'll talk about the Bears here next and then move on from there. But there's something else that happened in this game, and a lot of folks, this is where the freaky crazies come out with this team. But there's all kinds of word about trading Stafford. Well, Stafford's fault. He had a terrible game, and if a quarterback like that can't lead, he can't lead the team. He's not that good. He's not good enough. Again, as if the Vikings defense didn't have a say in this, right? And the fact that we didn't have turnstiles playing as an offensive line, and we didn't have a terrible set of play calls dialed up from the Cooter, and that, oh, by the way, the safety valve was missing. No, you're right. It's all on Stafford. You guys are fucking rocket scientists on this one. Boy, who would have seen that one coming? I just think the whole Stafford thing and that people are actually floating the trade Stafford. Case, tell me I'm wrong. Tell me those people were right. I don't see it, and I don't even understand come from.
I got a couple of thoughts. I've seen some comments both on the Lions sub and on RNFL talking about how much the sacks in this game were Stafford's fault. But I don't think those people actually looked to see if anybody was open when nobody was open.
What do you mean? There's an all 22?
It wasn't like, okay, so in a perfect world, you throw the ball away as opposed to taking a sack. But I mean, we're talking about a guy who's been playing in this offensive system with these plays, with this, you know, offensive coordinator for a couple of years now. And all of a sudden, nothing is working the way it used to. for him at all because Tate's gone. And I mean, as much as I agree with the idea that you can't overpay a wide receiver, I do think that Tate was absolutely a fundamental part of the way the team ran their offense, and that changing that in a matter of a few days,
easy,
that's gonna cause some problems.
Easy, it's Stafford's fault.
But I mean, I don't think there was a single sack that Stafford took in this last game where there was a clear situation where he should have thrown the ball to somebody who was open.
There wasn't anybody open, and
even if there was, they were definitely like the fourth or fifth read on the play.
And here, let me give you something else around that too. If you watch how the pocket collapsed, it collapsed on the sides. He had no opportunity. I mean, it literally just closed in on him. It didn't create gaps. It didn't create opportunity for him to move.
Yeah.
So if he's going to throw it away,
to sneak up. He's a good pocket mover, but that was not an available thing.
If he's going to throw it away, it's going to be intentional grounding because he's inside the tackles because they contain the shit out of him. First off, second off, the way and the speed in which they were coming in, I was watching, and he would like do this pump fake, it looked like, but he was going to throw the ball. And then he realized a couple things: hands in the air to block the pass, number one. Number two, no clear lane to throw the ball. And number three, so many times he, instead of being able to throw it away, they were so close, it would have bounced that ball in the air, and it could have been an interception, a deflection, any number of things. He didn't have the opportunity to actually go through any kind of a motion to throw the ball at all. It was an absolute train wreck all around him. And I'm going to go on record again. I did it in the post game. The improvisational pitch to Kerryon,
which was a bad idea.
Well, okay.
But
okay. I mean, sure. But hold on. It did hit Kerryon in the hands. Okay, so first off, and you got to imagine a son of a bitch will catch a ball. Okay, so there's just, but you got to just think again as a running back in the NFL, you've got to make just hundredth of a second decisions and be able to move. It hit him in the hands, so I just got to say he should have held that. But okay, unexpected, fine, it's a surprise. But you're looking at Matthew Stafford, who got fucking murdered in the backfield all day, and he's running out there with the ball.
Well, you're also,
and you know, he's about to get murdered again.
They are.
He's about to get murdered again. He's like, Jesus fucking Christ, we can't do anything. I'm going to take a shot and just try to make something happen because he's a fucking competitor because he fucking wants to win. And people that are like, oh, fucking Stafford, he was getting
it
murdered.
Isn't like if he'd he held shots, on to and carried it that they were going to win the game. He was trying.
He got a first down earlier in the game by running with the ball, and instead of sliding because he was right near the first down line, he dove head first, opening himself to take shots. And you saw him. He's like, oh fuck, they're coming! And he went head first to roll under him because had he slid, that ball was right at the line, and he might not have gotten that first down. Nobody wants to fucking talk about that. He's out there. He's a competitor. He wants nothing more than to win. And for people that say, trade him, he's no good, all that, fuck yourself. I'm sorry. This is the stupidest take on the Detroit Lions that I've heard all season, frankly, straight up.
I get so much shit, like even as a mod on our Detroit Lions, when anything negative comes up, and that I'm a homer to the nth degree, and that I just don't want to hear anything negative about the team.
You are.
I think that comes. Anybody who says that doesn't actually probably watch the show when I say a lot of negative things.
Homer.
But the one thing that's unlike to me that is not within question, and I'm not saying he's perfect, but Stafford is really good.
You put him
if
on
you give
any,
him the opportunity to be good, and when he's bad, it's usually because the opportunity to be good wasn't there. And that
put him on the Patriots and see how they do.
He was not given the opportunity to be good in this game. He certainly, his favorite weapon, especially in terms of, hey, I'll use the term again, safety valve, was gone, and he was trying to make some things happen. And I agree that the pitch was not perfect. Nothing about that play was perfect. But at that point, he's just trying to make something happen. And if you, the alternative is him trying to pitch the ball, you know, 60 yards down the field. He gets picked off 60 yards down the field because he's trying to make something happen when nothing is happening. it, you know, it, that's the dilemma there.
And, you know, Kerryon gets that ball and gets 8 yards. People are like, wow, what a play. That was wild.
Ballsy, right? Ballsy.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Let me tell you something else. Speaking of ballsy. It's always times like these when people like to surf Kelly Stafford's Instagram. And out it comes that she tells people who don't know what they're doing to shut the hell up. And there's a lot of people out there that don't know what they're doing, straight up, right? And then they made a big deal about that. And I got to say, first off, I don't disagree with her. She's allowed to have her opinion. People want to shit on her, fine, but it's weak, right? Matthew doesn't have a social media presence because just this kind Thank of God. Crap. You know what I mean? This is such stupid stuff, and it's so caustic and terrible. But I want to talk a little bit about something, because it's tied into really everything we've talked about here in the Minnesota thing. Nobody's tapped into this piece on Kelly Stafford's Instagram. And you guys need to really tune it up. If you're going to use Instagram and her Instagram as a news point, I'm talking to all of you out there, then read the damn thing. Because there's a nice little chunk of a little nugget that everybody missed. For those of you that don't know, every year the Staffords have a big Halloween party for the team, and everyone goes and all great and all that kind of stuff. And Golden Tate's girlfriend had a post at Kelly afterwards, and it was one of those, "Hey, you had a great time. That's awesome." And this was after the news cracked, obviously, because it's a Halloween party. "Can't wait to be back next year," with that little wink. Now, Riz talked about it. Ooh. Don't be surprised. little nuggets, right? People love to drop stuff like that, right? They love their Easter eggs. I'm not saying, but it's interesting that nobody picked up on that. Nobody. We're all going to talk about Kelly's Instagram and what's going on, and her saying shut the hell up. But nobody's really thinking about what's going on there and some of the talk that's going on. So is Tate coming back? I don't know. But I wouldn't be surprised. And if we walk into next year, because we got all kinds of space anyway to sign a guy like that, with a third round pick and Golden Tate in the roster, you could suck it.
I would love it if we did bring him back. It's just a matter of money at this point.
It's not that we won't have it. Money. And it's probably, after what's going on this week, if it continues like that, it's not like we won't be willing to spend it either.
But even if you bring him back, even if you bring Golden Tate back, he's you know, an older guy. So if they bring him back, they still better be working on a contingency plan for how they would adjust the offense if he would ever be hurt or leave again.
Yeah, absolutely. You can't,
because this last week was complete evidence that they did not have that plan in place.
I think that's going to revolve around a new offensive coordinator, but that's another topic probably for another time. So that's where that stands. Anyway, so is that, you know, with all that kind of breaking news and hot topics, I got to tell you, if you look at Fanatics right now, Golden Tate jerseys are cheap. Wouldn't you be the sly Bob Quinn GM thinking kind of wheeler dealer brilliant person if you went to DetroitLionsPodcast.com, clicked on the shop link, went over to Fanatics, and got yourself a nice new on-the-cheap Golden Tate jersey?
I legitimately might do that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, they are way cheaper now.
I love Golden Tate. I truly do, and I always will.
Yeah, so. No, I know that. We've got this right here.
I love Golden Tate.
So there you go. So that's the way to do it. And if you don't like it, you can build your own jerseys. You want one with your own name on it? That's great. You want to get a snacks jersey? Go pick one up. DetroitLionsPodcast.com. Click on the shop link. Head to Fanatics. They're going to give us a kickback. Got to be open and honest and transparent for you guys. That kickback comes to us for referring you there. It doesn't cost you anything more. And it's a great way to help the show out by doing what you were going to do anyway. So, again, DetroitLionsPodcast.com. Click on Fanatics. Any kind of sports gear you want, any team, any place, any kind of league, Lions first and everything else after. DetroitLionsPodcast.com. Click on the shop link and go to Fanatics and get that stuff. Love you guys who do that. Thank you for helping the show out. I did the math on this. You know, Case, the hours, I put in a half a working year of hours so far on the podcast. I love you people that go to Fanatics and make it worth a little bit of something.
We are not rich from this. yet.
No, it's on the cusp, let me tell you. And the fame, I can't even walk down the street. People always grabbing at me and harassing my family about how famous I am. And oh, it's just incredible. Let me tell you, living the life here.
I just gotta, this is like a almost a pull back the curtain thing, but at least a couple times a year, I get somebody on the subreddit who's very, very upset with me that I am a mod on the subreddit and on the podcast, and it like shill and you know, all these things get said to me.
You're getting rich off the subreddit, you bastard.
They, like the abuse of power and authority. Like, what do you think this is? What exactly do you think this is? That this is like a multi-million dollar conglomerate, you know, kind of situation. But I do get that. I should almost start like screenshotting all of them and like editing out the you know, the usernames. I'm not a dick like that.
I got a feedback piece from somebody saying, I used to listen, but now all the commercials. I'm like, we're doing like an hour and a half of content and you wind up with like a minute and a half of commercials per show. You must not watch TV. You must not do a lot of anything, right? If you think that's too much, my God.
I'm a very poor person. Anybody who...
But how are you financially?
Actually, I am very poor. As a person and financially, that is just like a baseline here. I'm not a rich man. I would love to get paid $1 million to do this. I do not.
You're rich in spirit, Case.
Even if Chris could pay me $1 million, he's kind of a, you know, a capitalist kind of guy.
So I'm a prick. Yeah. I'm a real prick.
Anyway, we're way off.
But okay. Let's end that on everybody save your pennies, because we're going to get a fly case to Detroit.
People think this is a personal like advancement in society. It's just something I do because
think
I
of where you were when you started and where you are now, Case. Lots changed, huh? So anyway, last thing, just save your pennies, folks, because we are going to sponsor a fly case to Detroit thing for training camp next year. So there you go. All right, let's move on. I got a lot of feedback when this was announced today. The Lions are signing a fan favorite and podcast favorite, Zach Zenner, back to the team. All right. And one of the first things that we were hearing is cue that I love Zach Zenner, and we're just not going to use it this show. We're not going to do it. We're not going to do it. We hate to be predictable, and so we're not doing it. There you go, Case. What do you have to say about Zach? Don't say that. Don't say that thing about your heart.
I'm not going to say it. I'm not going to say what you think I'm going to say.
That you like him a whole lot.
I have feelings.
I have a tingle down my leg.
No, I'm glad he's back. I'm glad he's back because not because I think that he's suddenly going to break out, but because I think that he has a real chance to add to one of the weaknesses of the team and something that we're also going to cover here.
Wait. He's going to add to the weaknesses of the team, did you say?
Well, but he's going to improve on a current weakness, and the current weakness is the strength of special teams, and Zach Zenner is a very good special teams player.
So. And let's also think about the fact that there was, after the cut of Abdullah today, there was no running back on the practice squad. If anybody was hurt, we were in deep doo-doo. Not necessarily that Zach Zenner is going to be Superman, but no. I don't want to hurt you here, Case, so I'm going to try to be judicious with my words. But at least he's somebody. And we've seen success. We've seen some success with him when people were trying to scream that he's the albino rhino for a while there.
This is probably the best offensive line. And did, you know, take away this last game, because they clearly were not this last game. But this would be the best offensive line that he ran behind in Detroit. Were he to see the field as a running back in normal situations, which I doubt that he will, unless there's another injury. But
what's your feelings on TJ Lang?
I think he gets cut this offseason. I do think he's talented. Mm-hmm. I just don't think, you know, that he's worth the money given the injury.
I love him. I love him, but my head says I can't put my I just can't stake my team on.
They need all the money they can get this offseason, and there really is a they're not rebuilding, rebuilding in the sense that, like, when you say that, people think you're tearing everything down. They're not tearing everything down, but there are a few areas where they need to make some major changes, and I think that
upgrades and an availability upgrade in that case. So. Yeah, that's that. Now, also, with the cut of Abdullah and the signing of Zach Center, we've also got one, and I know you're super excited about this case. You can use the love word here. Bruce Ellington has been signed to the team as a wide receiver. This is the solution for the missing Tate. Tell me I'm wrong.
I don't hate him. He's not terrible. He can do something.
Ringing endorsement here.
But I mean, it's clear it's a depth signing. I mean, if he doesn't even make the active roster on game days, the next few weeks, it's not going to blow my mind. Like, if Brandon Powell and TJ Jones continue to get snaps ahead of him, it's not going to surprise me that much. I mean, it is obviously an attempt to, fill a role. But nobody, Bruce Ellington could, you know, be a much better player than he is and still not fill the role that's, you know, vacant at the moment.
That's offensive coordinator intelligentsia. That's the vacant role.
Let me say this. One of my biggest concerns with this upcoming offseason is that we're still going to have a hard time filling any kind of role that suits that safety valve issue. It's not a good tight end class. I've been mildly happy with the progression of Roberts over the last few weeks. He's clearly not that super athletic, you know, kind of guy. And if you throw the ball at his feet and he tries to dive for it, he's not going to catch it.
He may kick it up in the air for an interception.
Right. But we don't have a tight end or a slot receiver that can truly fill the role that we are missing right now. And it really does. It does give me great concern because I don't see that available in free agency this year. So I'm trying to put hope in Brandon Powell, but you're talking about an undrafted free agent, you know, there. So
yeah. Yeah. And I have sense that we'll see Ellington running some balls back. I'm just getting the feeling he's done it before and he's probably the guy to do that. We'll see how that works out. Speaking of balls back, you may want to get yourself a nice rebounder. You're out there practicing your soccer here in the soccer season, or maybe I don't know. There's not a whole lot about getting your balls back here. Yeah. Go to Amazon, but don't go straight to Amazon. Go to DetroitLionsPodcast.com. Click on the Amazon link. It'll take you there and you can buy everything that you ever want, including things to help you get your balls back. And, you know, maybe we know some people could probably use that. Great way to help the show by doing something you were going to do anyway. All that shopping, all that kind of fun stuff. DetroitLionsPodcast.com, shop link, Amazon, go for it and help the show, you know, keep doing what it's doing. By buying your stuff and getting us that kickback that we talk about. All right, let's move on. There was a big move today. Maybe, you know, let's go. I've said it a couple times. I mentioned it or alluded to it in the show about Jim Bob Cooter and his future. I'm just going to kind of put it out here right now. I don't think he's gone before the end of the season. I mean, he would probably have to be sleeping with Bob Quinn's sister on the side and get caught, I think, to get gone before the season or something just as egregious. He's just not going to get gone because, look, you're stuck with his playbook anyway. You're stuck with his system. That's what's installed. That's what everybody knows. That's what you have. All you're going to get is different play calls and some inconsistency amongst the team. There's nothing really to gain from getting rid of him earlier. Keep him to the end of the season. Tell your quarterback, hey, we gave it 100%. We gave it a good go. He obviously didn't work. We're going to move on, and then everybody's fine, and that's that. So, but with all the screaming for heads, you know, people, this is part of the fan base right now and a little bit of cautiousness that we talk about. They took care of the special teams coach, and I think this is probably a good move in a couple of ways. First off, you have there was a rot that was going on with Caldwell, and we'll call it Ron Prince. He was there forever, and they would not get rid of him, and he was an obvious flaw in the team and the system and how they were doing things, and they wouldn't take care of it. This is Matt Patricia saying, I'm not afraid to take care of things, and he's done it. He's taking care of this. People say, oh, well, we had the best special teams last year. Well, the reason we had the best special teams last year was one player alone, Jamal Agnew. It was. His massive returns. So the massive returns, though, that Agnew got just really pumped the stats way the hell up.
It's Zach Zetter.
And Agnew's hurt, and you don't get those returns. And without those returns, even the incremental changes from Zenner and Carey, right? I'm straight up, you're not getting the returns that you got because Agnew's hurt and he's out. And so what happens? Oh, statistically, it looks worse. Let me tell you, this special teams is not, it's not a, oh, Matt Patricia got here, special teams got bad. Oh, it's not that, okay? There's a whole series of issues, and the special teams needed fixing. They've blown so many different plays and blocks and tackles and kicks, and across the board, it's just been ass. It was time, and I think this was a good move in that regard. Is it going to improve for the rest of the season? Well, they said what they're going to do is have a kind of team approach to coaching it. I wouldn't expect massive upgrades, but it was them saying, we're not afraid to make a move. We understand there's things that need to change, and this is one of them, and we're going to change it now without literally burning the stadium down for the rest of the season. Tell me I'm wrong, Case. You can't. You can't. I know. You can't tell me I'm wrong because I'm right, motherfucker.
I like to tell you wrong.
Call me Christodamus. That's it. Christodamus.
Nostradamus. There you go.
Christodamus. You can be Casedamus sometimes.
The issues on special teams, you can look at it a lot of different ways. Like I said, you know, we don't have a lot of the guys on that unit that we had last year. Don Carey, Zach Zenner, guys who made a lot of tackles. So if you're looking at the coverage side of it as opposed to the return side of it, there's that. Obviously, Abdullah was less than ideal as a returner because he can't hang on to the fucking ball. So that is a huge disappointment in terms of, you know, what I was hoping to see out of him. Not a surprise, but a disappointment. So when you look at special teams, it's really tough because you don't see that unit on the field enough for us as fans to really have a good concept of what's being done in terms of the coaching on it. You can look at, you know, the success and the failures, but whether or not those success and failures are on the talent and whether or not they're on the coaching can be extremely difficult to dissect. And but at the same time, you know, if you get to this point of the season and a guy gets canned in the unceremonious way that he did, you hope that it's a sign that the coaching staff recognized that there was a problem in the coaching and that was a significant issue in why some of the things have gone as poorly as they have. I do like a few of the players on the team in terms of their future on special teams. So I do think there's a reason to hope, you know, that things will go well in the future in terms of talent. But in terms of coaching, it's the most difficult, probably, you know, one of the three phases, offense, defense, and special teams, trying to take my perspective on what the strengths and weaknesses of our special teams coaching are is, you know, as a fan without inside access, all I can do is kind of make blind stabs.
I'll tell you something right off the top that you'll see 100% a change for next year. And Don Muehlbeck, gone. Guarantee you, this is last year. Will that help anything? I don't know. But he is your special teamer specialist. He's gone. The thing that's the worst part about that isn't that we're going to lose the consistency because he's really good at what he does, but the whole concept of this edgelord BS about long snapper watch. I hate that. Oh, yep. God, they just pumped that so hard, and then it's all over Twitter. It's as bad as the crap we've seen out of people this week. You just want to turn it off for a week and make it go away until the edgelord stuff goes away. But so that's a change that will happen. I bet you I will almost guarantee that this is Mealback's last year, and it's not because he's bad or anything like that, but he's probably done. Special teams has its own set of issues, and you're right, with Zenner back, you're going to see a lot of,
I love Zach Zenner,
work on the special teams, and you're going to see some good stuff out of him. I think that will help, actually, just because of his knowledge of the system and everything else. So we'll see how that goes. Now, let me talk a little bit about this, though, because it kind of feeds into something else, in case we talked about this a little bit in the pre-show show with the Patreon people, who we love so much, patreon.com/DetroitLionsPodcast. The media. And I'm gonna start with the most recent, I guess, before we go backwards. How bad a look is it for the Detroit News to do bad posture as their headline on the sports page after this Minnesota lost as a retaliation against what Matt Patricia said to Mike Rothstein of ESPN, for those who don't know who it was, who started this whole stupid bad posture conversation. This is a mess, right? I mean, this is just, that whole press room is a mess. It's gone stupid.
Yeah. All right. So if we're going to get into this, we're going to get into the entire state of the Detroit sports media.
Don't do bad posture, though. You might be on the front page.
Look, like, I'll agree that what Patricia said to Rothstein was probably, you know, maybe a little uncalled for. So I'm okay with that. Like, I'm while I'm still a Patricia, like, homeboy
disciple.
I'm not out here trying to defend every fucking thing he does. Like, it was it was not a wise decision by him to react emotionally the way he did. If I'm guessing at it, though, he's been at odds, and I don't think, you know, given his background in New England, where there is a contentious situation between the team and the media, only made slightly less contentious by the fact that the team keeps winning. Even given that history, I don't think he came into Detroit with the intent of building a contentious situation with the media. The media,
that's not the kind of guy he is,
built a contentious situation with him.
Exactly.
They've done it from day one. And I know, you know, there's the off the field stuff. So, like, I mean, that's, you could feel however you want to feel about that. I have my opinion. You're welcome to your opinion.
I got
to
say, let me just frame this a little bit, though, Case, because one of the things, every interview you see, anyone who's talked to him and dealt with him on a personal level, one-on-one or in small group situations, have talked about how efficacious and outgoing and nice and kind and wonderful of a person he is. And this isn't people that are paid shills to spew happy Matt right. Patricia propaganda. These are people that met him in situations and have seen what a great guy he really, really is. You contrast that with how the media is portraying him. And it's a dichotomy. Something doesn't add up here.
To me, the media is truly hurting at this point, and by extension, the fans who buy into it mm-hmm. are hurting the team. And I truly, truly believe that is a real thing that is happening right now. Like,
well, these are professional football players. They're supposed to just get past it, right? There's no such thing as a professional media.
Everything that... I was never the biggest Ebron fan, and we talked about him many, many times and talked about his flaws and his faults. But were it not for the extremes that the media, you know, took to him, and by extension, the fans, because while some of us aren't, you know, as prone to, you know, just buying into whatever the media says as others, there, I mean, the media dictates the fandom. Overall, when you look at it, you know, in its entirety, media says something and fans, the majority of fans believe it.
You know, I got a little bit of a rant that it started in the pre-show, right? You saw me kind of get lit up, and I got to do this again. We're recording this on Election Day, and you'll know, you should notice that in two of probably the most contentious elections in at least our lifetimes, you've never heard politics on this show. And I'm going to go into something here that is not political, but it refers to it. So please don't look at this as me taking sides. Don't try to read anything into this, okay? Because my politics are mine, and I don't purport to be able smart enough to even tell you what to think in that realm. Okay, so we'll start there. Now,
you're not smart enough.
No, not at all. not by any stretch.
But I'm just kidding.
Hi, pot. Anyway, so the situation you've got a world where people have chosen their side, whether it's red side, blue side, or squishy middle side, whatever. But by doing so, they've chosen the outlets that they want to believe, that they want to listen to, and they've created a bubble of breathing their own air and their team's air. And they don't hear anything from the other side. And really, news has broken itself down into a place where there is no real, honest, open, fair reporting. Non-biased reporting. Everything is absolutely biased, and opinion has crept so far now into the news that there's no need for an opinion page anymore, because the regular page is the opinion page, right?
Yeah, I won't argue with that.
Yeah. And I don't care what your politics are. That's just the case. And you're probably as guilty as everybody else of surrounding themselves with their echo chamber of news. Now, I say that, there's one more point to it. And the problem with it is because news has changed. It used to be that there was the hard wall, and we've said this a couple, 30, 40 episodes ago, there was a hard wall between the news and the advertising dollars. And now today, people that write news, they're measured on clicks, advertising dollars, the things that they generate for the business. That wall is gone. And that's a real problem, because now you have money and advertisers and clicks driving what your news is. And that's where you get those crazy clickbait headlines and all the shit with it. Now, all that piece that has whittled itself down into and fallen down into the sports world. And what we have in Detroit is we've had a series of years where Detroit has shrunk. And the city has fallen apart. Readership on the newspapers has dropped through the floor. Their ability to employ people has fallen through the floor. What they pay their journalists has fallen through the floor. They have been put into a unique set of situations in the city of Detroit, in that they have to drive revenue that's falling for all those reasons that's happening to the city. The city's stabilizing now, but they've fallen into this trap now where this new paradigm has become who they are. You couple that with that media room, and, you know, once Kowalski was gone and there were some other changes, the media room changed. A lot of the old hats are gone, and you have a generation of youth that's come in there that didn't have someone like a Killer Kowalski to follow on and to learn how to be a real media person from. And so they've grown up there and lived in this clickbait universe. And so they're all in there, and they're breathing their own air. Okay. And they realize that this contentious kind of relationship is what sells clicks. And what they've turned into is a group that amplifies the shit out of what each other says. And each one is hoping to be more popular by feeding off the other one. And it's this whole, like, the social media has become real life for them. and has become their, you know, it's not just a Twitter thing anymore. It's now expanded. Twitter isn't its own thing and isn't a way to promote what you're doing. It's now who you are, and it's now your stories just get generated because of what you've done and the extremities that you've gone to in social media and so on. And then you get your group of, you know, people breathing your air and amplifying what you're saying. And it's an absolute mess. It's an absolute mess. They've created a situation where they are going to have an adversarial relationship with the team. And just like you said, that's a negative for the team. It's a negative for fans. It's a negative for the news outlets because there used to be, you know, there used to be a line. There used to be a real battle between the news and the free press, right? Now they're owned by the same fucking company. They're just two sides of the same coin. It's a mess. It's all just a real bubbling mess of grossness and clickiness and insiderism and nepotism and please be my friend and retweet me so I can be popular too. It's really a weird mix of just not news.
Not news.
And and it doesn't do anybody any good. And over the long haul, if this is what we want our media and our press in Detroit to be, fucking God help us, man. God help us, because this is ridiculous.
Amen, Chris. and you, we've talked several times, and I've apologized to Justin Rogers on air a few times now. I'll take that apology and take it a step further. While I feel like he said something to us to the effect of, you know, his job was easier when the team was bad than when it was good. But at the same time, I truly don't get the impression from him that that's what he wants. He doesn't want the team to be bad. Meanwhile, so much of what else is going on in the Detroit media does feel that way. It's like they actively want the team to be bad. They want everything to go wrong so that they can, you know, make it a dramatic situation out of it. And they're creating a bad situation by doing so. They're creating a negative environment in which these players, these coaches, whatever are. And so at a certain point, I do think it is as a fan and fans are not exempt from this, because a negative fan attitude towards, you know, a new head coach with a less than ideal situation.
What they did to Patricia in the beginning is unforgivable.
That story still has not been advanced
one inch since that story came out. How disgusting.
It wasn't just that. It wasn't just that story. It was all the other things that were like, he's making players run camp. Oh my God, what a monster.
Yeah. That's them breathing their own air. That story, hey, let's get a victim on and get them and talking about it. And let's do this. And they all got to join in the big, you know, circle jerk about all that, about a story that had no merit, that didn't move forward at all. And it set the tone for everything that came after. And I'll tell you, if you're a fan of the team, this doesn't benefit your team. And, they're professionals. Everybody's professional, right? The journalists are supposed to be professional, and they're supposed to report the news, not make it or not be it. And we're not getting that anymore. And this does affect the team because there's people there, and they have a requirement that they have to talk to the media. So now you've got a caged animal that you're poke. What do you think's going to happen?
And that's what happened. That's what happened with Patricia with the posture thing. It was, he kept getting poked and eventually, you know, lashed out a little bit.
And now we got new news. Now we added a whole nother story for the cycle, and we can repeat and rinse and keep pushing the same stupid narrative
Patricia gets run out of town and we end up with a worse coach.
Because we really don't care about the team. We just care about the clicks.
So when and if this team, this coach, you know, burns out in this city, well before he should have, my attention on this is changing. It's not about, you know, you can win games, you can lose games, you can do everything right as a coach, but if everything is stacked against you as heavily as everything is stacked against him right now, how are you supposed to come out of that as the good guy?
And if he does win, how does the narrative change in the press? Do they get to just wash their hands and walk away and be?
Yeah, they do. Well, that's exactly what they'll do. They'll pretend that they never were, that they were never, you know, as
they
negative.
Won't. That's the problem. And that's they're establishing not only the relationship, but the tenor of media here. And unless some of these young guys quit breathing the air and start doing something different, it's going to be this, no matter how well or how bad they do. And it's a disservice to everybody. There you go. I don't know if I have any more about it, but
that's about as political as we've ever gotten.
Yeah.
And we didn't even say anything about Republicans or Democrats. Yeah. So.
Now you went and broke it. Great job. All right. So there it is. There it is. And I just want, there is one more thing I want to say, because you mentioned a guy in particular that I think in case I'll speak for you here, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, but I think it was a great awakening, the interview with him, and then thinking about it and learning afterwards. Justin Rogers is one of my favorites, one of the real good guys out there. Yeah. He's again, opened the eyes, right? For
took me some time. It definitely took me some time, but I figured it out. I understand now.
Yep, absolutely. And I recommend, right here, I recommend giving him the clicks. But
can we get him back on the show? Will he ever talk to him?
Oh, yeah. I chat, I DM with him a lot, here and there a lot. So let me see. We'll get him on. We'll talk. And maybe you guys can do a kumbaya, a big hug or something.
Yeah.
But I tell you what, there's some real problems in that press room. And I know the Lions opened it up a little bit more. They knew media was out right before, and they've opened it up a little bit more this year, and it hasn't gotten better. It hasn't helped them. It hasn't helped the product. It hasn't helped the marketing. It hasn't helped anything. And I think their strategy, I need to rethink that, because it's, I'm not saying get a bunch of shills in there, right? But what you want is a fair accounting. That's all you want. Just be fair. And if it's fair, everybody's better for it. So, end of that. Hey, you know who does good media?
Who?
Peter Von Panda. He is one of our show sponsors. He's been awesome. Our YouTube guy, youtube.com/PeterVonPanda. You know, notice how I said he's a sponsor. I didn't say, hey, go get clickbait. You see that. Of all these things, we're pretty transparent about it. We're not trying to hide or any of that stuff for you. So anyway, Peter Von Panda is out there, and he does some wicked, wicked reviews. Anytime you're thinking of buying something, go there. It's worth checking his YouTube channel out, because he's reviewed just about everything, and he does it with good humor, and he puts things through their paces. And not only that, he's got some really, really great other videos as well. Some really funny, funny stuff. Peter Von Panda, big show listener, fan of the show, likes the show, and wanted to step up and help the show by sponsoring us throughout the season this year. So please go to his channel. I forget. He's like over 50,000 subscribers. So, you know, 50,000 people can't be wrong. Maybe they could, but not with Peter. They're not. He's got really, really good, funny content.
Careful in this election season.
I did it on purpose.
A lot of people can be wrong, man.
So check him out. Love his stuff. Love him. Tell him we sent you there, and give him support. He's supporting us, and it was really kind to him. He believes in our show. So even though he believes in our show with a little bit of money, certainly believe in what he's doing over there, because he is genuinely a funny guy. I'm not just saying that because he sponsors us, but he's got some good stuff. So youtube.com/PeterVonPanda, check it out. He is absolutely fabulosio. All right, let's talk about what's coming up, Case. We've been through the doom and gloom and the horrors of this last week. The firings, the trades, the nervous breakdowns, the re-signing of...
I love that, Xander.
And so much more. And now we're off to Chicago. We're going to go give them some sausage, right?
I'm concerned.
Wait a minute.
I hate that I'm concerned.
Hold on. What are we, 9 out of the last 10? 11 out of 12?
I'm not writing us off by any means. I think I'll probably even pick the Lions to win in my pick 'em league.
Trubisky only got 161 yards in the last game. There was everything they did was on defense. And their defense is no Minnesota defense by any stretch. They're fine. They're a fine defense, but it's not Minnesota. I think we can beat these guys. I think we can beat these guys good.
Well, I think we can too. I think we can too. It's the 10 sacks ringing in my head. It feels like a Christmas song. 10 sacks are ringing.
There's, hold on, just stop, because I'm going to take that. I mean, you know, I lower the bar, Case. You're singing 10 sacks of ringing. You know where. Just talk. Okay, just do something.
Jesus, but I will probably take the Lions to win the game in my pick'em group, which should tell you that's what I actually think will happen, because like I said, I did not take them this last week when the Vikings beat us, so I got a point for that. But at the same time, our offensive line looked so bad last week, and if Khalil Mack plays, oh God, what are we going to do?
We're going to win.
Who are we going to throw the ball to is Theoretic going to play 75% of the offensive snaps? I hope not. But that might be the only way to keep Stafford from getting killed.
If he plays in the slot.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I mean. Like playing two running back sets. And
he was a wide receiver at Notre Dame. That's where he started. He'll be okay in the slot. I think he's fine. He's not Golden Tate, but he does create changes in the way the defense has to defend the team and becomes an outlet. I think we've seen two sides of Mac. If you go back to the first game of the season with Green Bay against Chicago, how it was truly two halves, right? Chicago dominated, and they thankfully injured Rodgers. And I say that not wanting a person hurt, but thankfully the team is suffering. But they injured Rodgers in the first half, and then the second half the Packers came back and destroyed them, right? That was really the primer on how to beat the Bears, right? And I think we're a team that can take that and we can beat them. And it really is. I mean, Khalil Mack is a guy you got to look for, obviously, but you can scheme around that. They have some good guys in defense, but we can beat them. I just think we match up really well against them. As long as we take care of Khalil Mack, I think we're going to be in really good shape. Much like the Tease Tabor thing of last week. I hope the results are different, but I think the Mack action is the key to the game this time. If we can control him, we're going to do fine. And he's had, I mean, I didn't specifically see how he did last week, but between games one and two, and not including last week, he hasn't been as dominant a force as we would have expected after those first two games. He's been kind of controlled. And so scheme can do this.
Yeah, I won't argue with that at all. And I do think that is a, you know, like I say, I've seen most of Chicago's games this year, and I truly believe that the, you know, massive positive side of things is a mirage. I think this is a team that if they were to somehow win the division or get a wild card spot, that they would immediately be burned in the playoffs. Like I just they've taken advantage of bad teams, which is something that a team of their caliber should do, and something the Lions have failed to do this year, beat the teams they should beat. So I'm not trying to take anything away from them necessarily, but when it comes down to it, I really don't think they're actually a really good team. I think they're actually a mediocre team that has a few really good players.
Yeah, absolutely. And from the Lions' perspective, they've lost to the teams they should beat. They've beaten the teams they were supposed to lose to. And I don't know how this is where it gets really weird, because Chicago shouldn't really be first based on the team they have and the personnel they have. But there they are in first. So by that statement, it means we should beat them because they're good. But we know underneath the kind of veneer that they're pretty rotten. And by that measure, we should lose. So look for a close game that we pull out.
You would.
I just might. So anything else that you want to look for the game, Case, or did we do this whole thing this week?
It seems like every week I say this, but Jim Bob Cooter continues to get tested, and this will be his biggest one yet. If he can figure out a way to make this thing work without Golden Tate, then the man deserves to keep his job. And I know that a lot of people are going to be angry with me saying that, but if he figures out a way to make this, and I'm not saying he will, I would be a little surprised if he does, but if he does, then you have to give him some credit.
Yeah, I think Jim Bob's done already. I just think the decision hasn't been made, even if he wins.
I don't think you're wrong.
I even if he wins out against the division, that Minnesota game may be the real test on whether he keeps his job or not. But I think he's done. I think the team's ready to move on, even if he does well, and then they'll go from there. So on that bombshell, we'll end the show for this week. Remember, we're looking for your involvement. Use the comments in the subreddit to give us that feedback. Let us know how you think we can help the show make it better. It's the community that does that, and we take those comments very seriously because you won the show. Also, don't forget we're doing a new Friday show, me and the Riz. We got a quick take show, get you ready for the weekend, get you ready for the weekend's game. And of course, on Sunday after the game, the live post-game show, you get to call in. It's a great way after that game thread to get in and share your love, your hate, whatever happens. Share it with us and we'll put you on live. We'll have a great conversation. Also, don't forget about us on Patreon, patreon.com/Detroit Lions Podcast, patreon.com/Detroit Lions Podcast, and check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/TheDetroitLionsPodcast, facebook.com/TheDetroitLionsPodcast. Also, we're on Twitter machine at DETLionsPodcast, DETLionsPodcast, the very, very best place to see Case.
Oh, fuck. Why am I not paying attention?
Don't forget to give us a call via Skype at Detroit Lions Podcast, all one word, Detroit Lions Podcast, or call us on the Lions line at 929-33-LIONS. It's 929-335-4667. And be sure to go to DetroitLionsPodcast.com, subscribe to the podcast so we can come in your little box automatically. Thank you for tuning in, and we're going to see you next time on the Detroit Lions Podcast. Is your Detroit Lions and Reddit connection.
5 seconds winding down, and look at that. How big is that? Chris and Case out of time. Pack the bags, start the plane. This show is over.
Hey, Dean Blandino here, and I can tell you unequivocally that call was 100% wrong.
You need to stop eating those Twinkies and get this team ready. Stop eating the Twinkies, Matt.